Hello and welcome to Anna with Two N's English podcast and welcome to season two. I feel very excited to be saying that. So I'm going to be bringing you lots of new content, lots of new episodes every Wednesday. Every Wednesday you're going to be getting a new episode. I'm going to be releasing it a little bit earlier because some of you like to get up earlier than 6 o'clock. Would you believe it? I'm going to be releasing all of my episodes at 5 a.m. every Wednesday, and I've got lots of exciting stuff planned for you, including today's episode. I wanted to kick off season two with a bit of a bang, but also give you something a little bit different and exciting. So I've invited a very special guest onto my show today. We're going to be talking about lots of different topics. We have different accents, so it is fantastic listening practice for you. Now, this is an interview recorded over Zoom, so make sure that you have that volume up just so you can get the maximum sound, so you can hear everything that we're saying, and enjoy it, okay? If you want to take a little break, it's a little bit longer, this chat conversation today, so take little breaks, repeat sections, repeat the whole thing. But before we go anywhere, let's have some nice samba music, please. Okay, Tommy, welcome to Anna with Two N's podcast. Thank you so much for being here today. Now, I'm not going to introduce what you're going to talk about, but just so you know, guys, Tommy is a colleague. I work with him in Vaughan Systems in Madrid, and I wanted to invite Tommy on the show today to talk about a new project, a new podcast that Tommy is doing with Vaughan. So he's going to tell us a little bit about that in a second. And we're going to talk a little bit today about the world of football. Now, as you guys know, I'm not an expert in football, but Tommy absolutely is. So we're going to have a little bit of a chat about football and learn some really interesting and exciting things as well, and talk about some of the stuff that's in the media around football at the moment. So Tommy, I'm going to let you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your podcast. So tell us about you and your podcast that you're doing at the moment.
Okay, so thanks for having me on, first of all. It's an absolute pleasure. We've been doing a football podcast since January 2020. So it was an interesting year to start because it was a very interesting football season. There's never been any football season like this. But I've had an idea for a long time to make an educational football show. And I've been a colleague of yours for 3 years now, more or less, or coming on 3 years.
Yeah, 3 years, yeah. Mm-hmm.
At Vaughan. And we're very lucky at Vaughan that we have a radio station. So I've pitched the idea to them a couple of times of doing an educational football show. And I met a guy that we work with called Ruben Palomero, who wrote a book called Speak Football. Basically just on that subject of teaching English through football vocabulary for people interested in playing football, for people interested in watching football, for journalists, for people interested in coaching football, for everybody, anything that's remotely related to it. Because I've just always thought it's a very fun way to learn a language, doing that. And if you focus on something that's your hobby, that you're interested in, it makes language learning so much more fun, you know? Makes it so much more easy, so much more fun if you can do that. So we had a pilot show, a test show in December, and then in January we just got going with it, and we've done I think 25 episodes now, something like that. And it's great. Every week we teach a new aspect of vocabulary. We have a talk about football history, something that happened in the past. We'll talk about something that's happening just now in the news and all that. So we've had a lot of very interesting shows recently with the whole coronavirus thing and how that's affected the game and all that. And I'm just a complete freaky, a complete geek for football. And I can happily talk about football history whenever you sit me down and ask me a question. And Ruben's the same. He's great. So that's what we do. It's every Saturday, 12 o'clock on Vaughan.
Okay, yeah, it's called, so far. Yeah, actually I was listening to one of the episodes that you did, your latest episode, And one of the things I really liked is you do a section called, is it Guess the Mystery Player?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so it's like a guess who thing, which I, there's an exercise which I love doing in my class with my students, in general with other famous people. But that one I really liked. And there was one that you were talking about in your last show, which I thought was kind of amazing. It was a guy that started, I'm going to read it off here because I have some notes because there were quite a few things. A guy that started as an ice hockey player. Mm-hmm. Then he lost his leg when he was 57 years old. And then he won a gold medal at the Olympic Games. And he only ever played for one club in his whole life.
Yep. So you used to get all, you used to get all these things happening in the past. I mean, he did lose
it's
his
crazy.
Leg after he retired, I have to say. But
Well, of course. He wasn't playing with one. Yeah, that, right.
Yeah, he would be a very talented goalkeeper to do it with one leg. But I mean, still, I mean, yeah, he was great. It was a goalkeeper called Lev Yashin, and he used to play for the USSR, which is Russia, Soviet Union. And yeah, my granddad's, both of my granddad's, my grandparents talked to me about him when I was young. And just about how good he was and stuff. But very little video exists to these guys, you know, but they're very interesting people because especially footballers in the past, they're not like the ones nowadays that earn lots and lots of money, that travel around different countries, different clubs and everything. A lot of them did play for one team and that was what it was. You know, they didn't move about as much and a lot of them didn't get a lot of money either. So they would have interesting lives. They would maybe when they retired, they would open up bars, or you know, they would go into management, or they would do something else, go into journalism and things. So they were kind of, there's maybe an argument to say footballers were more interesting in the past because they were forced to be. They were forced to be like multi-talented people
because it wasn't as lucrative as it is now. Is I guess what you're saying. It's not like. Yeah. You know, millions and millions of pounds. Or there was another, that's really interesting because I've never thought about that. Because as you said, now footballers, do you mean footballers don't move around as much now, or they don't have to be, as you said, as multi-talented? Like they focus on football and that's their main thing.
They pretty much can. I mean, if you play in a top league in Europe, you're on crazy amounts of money. You know, it's like it's thousands and thousands and thousands a week when you get to some of these clubs. And that just wasn't the case in the past. So they can just sort of live off that money. They can survive with that money and they don't need to think about their future too much. When you get lower down the levels, they do. And it's quite funny, like there are some of the stories that what some footballers do in their spare time. In the Scottish, like second division, for example, you've got firemen. You've got joiners, electricians. There was one guy, he's actually the manager of a Scottish club called Hibernian now, his name Jack Ross. Before he retired, he was playing for a team called St Mirren, and they didn't pay very much money, and he was a part-time DJ, a disc jockey, and that was his job. So like, they're still kind of interesting guys, but see, when you get to the top level, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo is not going to be having to open up a bar anytime soon.
He's not going to be a joiner. It is part-time. It is free time. He's not going to... actually, just for our listeners, because I think electrician, most people can understand, DJ, but a joiner, how would you describe a joiner, Johnny?
Yeah, so a joiner would just be like somebody who does like a kind of manitas in the house, like a handyman in the house who fixes things in the house and... they would fix I don't know, if you have a broken door, for example, they come in to fix that. It's in Spanish they say like handyman, like manitas. It would be a joiner. But like just a general worker that comes into your house.
That's super
not to be confused with a plumber, which is fontanero. A plumber's just all the stuff that all the kind of horrible stuff that you don't
the
want
pipes,
to touch, you know?
No, yeah. I don't think I could be a plumber, but I've heard that it's a very, to say the word lucrative again, I've heard it's a very lucrative profession. If you can get some good clients behind you, you can earn quite a lot of money, I think, being a plumber. So if you're in the middle leagues, you might have some interesting part-time jobs, but not when you get to the top. Just to go back to your roots, because some people might be wondering, what your accent is or where you're from, because your accent is different to mine. So can you tell us a little bit about where you're from and your accent? Because people love to know about accents and the different accents that we have or different accents English speakers have.
Yeah, I'm from a place on the west coast of, well, not the west coast, just the west of Scotland called Glasgow. It's the biggest city in Scotland. And I was born there. I lived there until I was 21, 22, something like that. So that's where my accent's from. But I've been living in Spain for the last 4 years. I studied Spanish at university, so that's what took me here. So I've been living here for a while. There are people in Glasgow that have a much thicker accent than me. Un acento más cerrado than me. Yeah, they've got a much thicker accent. But I think you learn how to speak in a different way so that people can understand you, because it's not a very common accent. There's only 5 million people in Scotland, quite a small country. So people aren't ready for it. You know, they know from looking at me that I'm not like from Spain, but they don't know where I'm from.
It's interesting because a lot of people say that my accent, well, my friends and family, for example, that live in the UK, they tell me that my accent's completely changed since I've been living in Spain, because I've adapted. They're like, and a lot of my listeners and students tell me, well, Anna, your accent sounds a little bit more American. I don't know why that's happened, but my accent has kind of got a little bit of an American twang to it, or I say things in a different way. Has your accent become less hard, as you'd say, than it was when you lived in Glasgow? Or have you always had like a softer Glaswegian accent?
I've always had a softer Glaswegian accent, but I would never use the contractions that we use in Scotland when I'm talking to a Spanish person in English. For example, I wouldn't say like, okay, so instead of saying wouldn't, no lo haría, what would we say, do you know? In Scotland, we say
wouldn't.
Wouldn't, right. So when I'm back home, I talk like that. When I talk to my friends, I talk like that. When I talk to friends that are natives from like Ireland, for example, I talk like that as well. But when I talk to Spanish people, I just don't do it.
Because Spanish people would have no clue. They'd be like, what is this guy talking about?
But we do that with so many words. We contract it. And before I came here, I didn't really think about it too much. And then, you know, originally it was a big effort I had to make, but then it stops really being an effort. It becomes kind of normal. And also my voice has changed a little bit in the sense that the intonation sometimes is a little bit Spanishy, because I speak Spanish like every day. And occasionally I'll say something and then I look for confirmation at the end of the sentence. So I'll say, no. I think you do that as well.
Everyone does it.
Everybody does it. Everybody that lives here does it, no. And that's a Spanish thing that comes into your sort of
And it's a language. Really bad habit, actually, because my family have picked me up on that, because it's a lot of English speakers that move to Spain, they start doing this, no, at the end, like you said, at the end of sentences. And it sounds really weird if you go back to the UK and you say no, because we don't say that. We use question tags, so we would say like isn't it or doesn't it or whatever. So it sounds really bad. And I remember my mom and my sister was like, why do you keep saying no at the it sounds very strange for native speakers in the UK. That little, it's a bad habit, I get, or a Spanglish habit. It's something that we pick up from Spanish speakers. But I like it. It's much easier. It's much quicker.
Is it more efficient than saying, isn't it? You can just say no. Nice two-letter
word. It's perfect. It's great. Coming back to football, we're kind of people doing different things other than football. This was something I learned a few months ago. I don't know if, I guess you probably will know this, but one of the, some music that I listen to in Spanish that helps me learn is Julio Iglesias.
Okay.
Bit of a guilty pleasure, I have to say. Okay. I don't really like admitting it, but I've already said it on my podcast, so it's gone anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Nothing wrong with a bit of Julio. Begin to Begin. What a song that is.
Oh, he has so many good songs, and he's so clear when he sings. Yeah, it's good. So it's great for me to learn, and they're nice. What we would probably call him in English, like a crooner.
Mm-hmm. Like a sort of Frank Sinatra equivalent kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember, and also I learned about him from these memes. There's like so many memes about Julio Iglesias. So anyway, and he apparently, I didn't know this before, I thought he was just a singer, but apparently he used to play, or he was a professional player for Real Madrid.
And yeah, then, he was a goalkeeper.
And then he like reinvented himself and became like this worldwide famous singer. And I was like, that's amazing. Like I had no idea. I was just really, I don't know. I thought he was just a singer and that's still an amazing thing, but I didn't realize that he had this football past. I think he had an injury, right? Or some kind of...
Yeah, accident. I can't remember exactly what he did, but I think it was like I don't know if it was his back or something, but he wasn't very lucky with injuries in his career. But no, apparently he was a good goalkeeper, really good goalkeeper, but it's just that some of these guys, that's another risk as well with footballers, if they get injured young and they don't have a plan B, that can be a problem. But Julio obviously just had so much talent that he could sort of do anything. So he became a, you know, he's one of the record selling artists of all time.
Oh, he's massive. Yeah, he's like crazy, like selling records. And but I just thought, like you said, it's amazing that some people have that ability to reinvent themselves and be successful, if not more successful, in something completely unrelated. I mean, I don't know if I would be able to reinvent myself as like, I don't know. It was just very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. You do get inspiring. You do get some sports people at that. Like there was a guy who played for Manchester United in the 1990s called Eric Cantona. And he played for Manchester United and Leeds and Marseille in France and a few other teams. And he's an actor now. Like a really well... you know, received actor, like a really good actor. And it's like, it's amazing just to do that transition to that. There's another guy in Scotland called Martin Compston. He used to be a footballer. He's now one of the top actors in Scotland. He's been in lots of different films. Wow. It's amazing how people can just... I think footballers get a bit of a bad reputation because I think lots of people think that they're all stupid and that they're just ignorant, and they're not. They're just they're a representation of working class society. Now, you know, people in the working class, you get some people are dumb, some people are smart, some people are right in the middle. Some people like to read books, others don't like to read books. You know, it's like, I think it's a bit stupid to say that they're all dumb, that they're all idiots and stuff, that they're not. You get a lot of footballers are really smart. A lot of footballers speak multiple languages as well. You know, I think like the amount of effort I've had to put in to learn in Spanish to a good level. And then I see somebody like Pjanic, who's just signed for Barcelona. He speaks six languages.
Oh, my God. So
he speaks he's from Bosnia. He speaks fluent French. He will be learning Spanish at the moment, and he'll probably do it fine. He's played in Italy. He's played in France. You know, he's learned all these languages and stuff, and I think he speaks German as well. So it's you know, some of these guys are not stupid. You know, they're really talented guys.
But you're right. They do. There is a stereotype, but and of course, not all people fit the stereotype. But there's definitely that view that, you know, you said like that maybe footballers are not as intelligent as other people. But for me, like when I think about footballers, I think about people that are very disciplined. They like hard work. Like you've got to be super. You sacrifice so much of your life, training, you know, you're loyal to your clubs or whatever, but you picked up on something really interesting that I want to talk about just there. Like the language barrier, when you're a player, do you have to speak the language of the club that you go to, or do you have like an interpreter that goes around with you 24/7? Because that must be hard to manage, that dynamic with a new team. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so most modern clubs will basically force the players to learn the language, and some, you know, they give them free lessons, they get really good teachers and all that, and some of the clubs are more insistent on it than others. So I saw a video last night. It was of Bayern Munich in Germany, and they're really insistent that everybody learns German. They go to multiple classes every week. The only language in the dressing room, the vestuario, the dressing room, is German. That's all they're tolerate. Now there might be an interpreter there to help you along in your first few days, your first few weeks, but really you need to get in and do it. And managers get a little bit more help because managers, some different factors come into it. One, managers are older and it's difficult to learn a language if you're older. Mm-hmm. It just is. The older you are, the more difficult it is.
Fact.
Yeah, so they'll maybe have an interpreter. Also, the concepts that a manager has to explain are more complicated than what a player has to understand, if you know what I mean. The manager has to say exactly the way he wants his team to play. It's very complicated, tactics and things like that. So he wants to make sure his message is across, is given well, you know. So Marcelo Bielsa, he's an Argentinian manager. He's been at Leeds United in England for 2 years now. I've never seen him speak English. He just doesn't. I think he knows it, but when he gives his talks to his team and when he appears in the media, he's always got his interpreter there with him, just helping out. And I think that's fair enough because Bielsa's about 60 something. And I think it would be very difficult to not know anything of a language and then just 62, 3, 4 years old have to be able to talk fluently in it. Especially if somebody, you think about how nervous it made you at the beginning when you were speaking Spanish. Imagine somebody put a camera in front of your face and told you to speak, you know, be really, really nervous. So some guys do better, some guys do worse. Another Argentinian manager, Pochettino, who managed in England, he arrived, didn't know any English, and for the first maybe 6 months, he always had his interpreter there, always, always, always. And then one day, I was watching the television, and he came out by himself. He came out alone and just started speaking English. And I was like, well done, Mauricio Pochettino.
Good for you.
Yeah, it's like, it's good. So, but managers have definitely, there's more of a demand to speak English for managers than for players. Players really just have to understand, I think, is the most important thing. And if you can communicate, it helps. It helps you get to know people. It helps you build up a relationship. And a lot of football is psychological as well. So if you can communicate with people and you know you can trust the person, I think that definitely helps. Definitely helps.
Well, that's interesting because I can see why. I mean, it's a fact, as you said, as you get older, it doesn't mean that it's impossible to learn a language, but it is more difficult, like to do everything gets more difficult when you get older. Like I realize now, I mean, you're younger than me, but you'll get to this phase, but now I'm like broaching 30. I'm like, it's much harder to lose weight. Like I just feel more tired and I'm like, I'm only reaching 30. Like what's going to happen when I'm 40? But it's true that it can be more difficult. That's really, because I'd never know how that would happen. Because I guess, you know, to build that relationship with the team and your teammates, I guess, or the rest of the team, it's important. And I guess it's a sign of respect as well for me, even to make an effort. Like you don't have to be fluent in German, for example, but to show that you're making an effort to join and be part of that team and build that trust is, I think that's important.
And for the fans' point of view as well, that's their culture. Their language is their culture. That's what defines a country in many ways. And I think that's been one of the problems with Gareth Bale, for example, at Real Madrid. Now, he's been there since 2013 and he doesn't really speak Spanish. He's maybe spoken once or twice and it was years ago, you know, so it was quite basic. So he doesn't make media appearances. If the team has a bad game, he can't come out and defend himself in Spanish, or he chooses not to. So I think that's part of the reason the Real Madrid fans he's not very popular with them, because he doesn't have that link, that level of communication with them. And I just think lots of factors there for it, but I think a big thing would have been if over the last few years he'd come out and had more interviews in Spanish, maybe done a press conference every now and again, I think that really would have helped him. But every time you see him in the media, he's speaking English. And also, you hear other things like he doesn't really interact with his teammates very much. He goes home, instead of going out for dinner with them, for example, he'll go home to Wales. He'll fly home to Wales instead of going out for dinner in Madrid. So I think a lot of those fans think that he doesn't really accept the culture. And I think the language is a big, big part of that.
And I think I mean, looking at it from Gareth's perspective, maybe it's one of these things about fear of that of the language or fear of being in a position where you're like a little bit vulnerable and you can't say everything you want to say. So you prefer to just ignore it and kind of not do those things rather than, and I can totally understand that because if that's the case, because I've had many times when I'm like, you know what, I just rather not go because, you know, with a group of Spanish people, because I'm like, I just don't want to feel like an idiot and they're just going to speak too fast and I'm just going to sound stupid. So I'll go another time or I'll go next week. So I think that there's a big fear with that barrier. But the thing is, you just have to get over it. Like you have to just try and
you have to get over it. And then when you do get over it, you think, what the hell, what was I worried about? And it's just that it's, but I think at the beginning you can maybe get through 20 minutes of conversation in Spanish and then you're just like, oh God, my head hurts. I'm thinking too much. And then it stops working and you just want to speak English. Okay, well, start off, do 20 minutes. Then next time, try and do 30 minutes. Next time, try and do 40. But don't give up. Keep going out. Keep doing it. And one of the reasons I love Spanish people is that they've always been welcoming to me. They've always been nice to me and patient with me when I've been speaking their language. And they really thank you for it. You know, they're really appreciative of it. So it's I think it goes both ways. If you're learning English, if you think your English isn't very good or if it's a big effort for you, don't worry. Like, go out and try. Mm-hmm. And you come home at night and you feel good about yourself. You will. Like it's a great thing to do.
That's some really good advice. Coming back to at the beginning, you're talking about how this season of football is different to any other that's ever happened. And one of the things that I think is really interesting is now football matches are being played in empty stadiums. So there's no spectators, there's nobody there. Right. They're just playing for themselves. Do you think that players enjoy that environment, or do you think it's a little bit eerie, a little bit strange? Because I imagine at the home stadiums, they probably miss that extra support. But then at the away games, they're like perfect because they don't get any abuse or any people shouting at them or trying to distract them. What do you think they prefer? Have you heard or read anything about the situation in regards to that?
Basically, all of them have said it's weird. Like every interview I've ever seen of it, they're just like, no, really weird, don't like it. And it's funny because maybe if you've ever been to a football match, you know that there are lots of insults towards the players and people shouting at them and all that. And on one hand, you might think, oh, maybe they would enjoy not having that. Maybe they would enjoy it without the fans, but they prefer the fans. It's not normal for them to play a puerta cerrada, behind closed doors, as we would say. I think it's especially bad for teams who need a big audience at home to help them. So there's Getafe in Spain, for example. Their ground's called the Coliseo, the Coliseum, it would be in English, and it is a bit like that because when nobody likes going to play at Getafe, nobody likes it. It's like that the fans are on top of you. They're shouting at you. It's a very difficult atmosphere to play in. And the team is very aggressive. And I think the team responds to the fans. There was somebody earlier on in the season, I can't remember who it was, described that going to Getafe was like going to the dentist. You just want to get in and out.
In and out.
In and out as fast as possible. Waste no time. So you think of a team like that, and all of a sudden, because of this COVID situation, the audience aren't there, the fans aren't there. Suddenly it's much more easy to go and play at Getafe. And I think the players they don't have that extra energy.
Yeah.
You know, fans are often referred to as the 12th man. You know, you get 11 players and the number 12 is it can really make a difference. And to take that away, I think it's a big thing. And there are lots of teams like that. Teams that are at the top of the table, really the top of the table, they know they've got the quality that it maybe doesn't matter as much. So it didn't affect Real Madrid at all. They won all their games after COVID, and it didn't make any difference at all. I think generally speaking, interviews and things like that I've seen with players, they do not like it at all. It's like really strange. And especially not Getafe. They really don't like
it. everyone's happy about the situation with Getafe. They're like, yes, perfect. No aggressive or intense fans, maybe is a better way to say it.
That'll be it.
There was a, because aggressive is too negative. Intense. We'll say intense. It's a better way of putting it. There was actually a story in the press about a Korean team, football team, that filled their stadium with sex dolls in the stands. Did they say in the stands? Is that football terminology, in the stands? Like the
in the stands, yep. In the stands, yep.
Yeah. And I was thinking, I'm not sure if it was a bit of a publicity stunt because it was everywhere in the news, like in all over. And I was thinking, I'm not sure if that's a bit of a publicity stunt, but I was like, that's a strange thing to choose to put in the seats, and also really expensive.
Like, yeah.
Why would you do that? It's clearly not a person. I just thought it was a very strange move.
Well, I actually have no idea what that was. Was it like some kind of art thing or something? It was like, because I Googled it just a little while ago, because I didn't know about it until you told me. See, I don't really follow. It's called the K-League over there, the Korean League. I think it was a surprise. I don't think the league knew about it. I think the league were very angry about it.
They got a big fine for it. They were forced to apologize. This is why I think it was a bit of a publicity stunt, because obviously I don't know if Korean football is very popular right now, or maybe they're trying to kind of like reach new, I don't know, whatever. Because I thought, what a strange thing to do. This says here,
is that a video of the sex dolls?
No, not a video, but it's an advert on the page. Great, give me a fright because it's really loud. FC Seattle said the team was initially informed that the dolls weren't for adult use. Well, that's good.
Oh, well, that's fine then. That's fine. Child friendly sex dolls then?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But
for all the family.
So after this, I guess one of my last question about that area is, do you think that this situation with coronavirus is going to cause any permanent changes to the way that football is done in the different leagues, at the top leagues or the middle leagues or the bottom leagues? Are there going to be any permanent changes to how things work? Like, when do you think spectators will come back to the stadiums?
Oh, it's a big question. I mean, it's like, when do you think anything's going to go back to normal in a way? Like, if you like concerts, when's the next time you're going to be able to go to a concert? It would probably go along the same lines as that, because football at the end of the day is a mass gathering. You know, you can get up to the Camp Nou in Barcelona, it's 90,000 people. When are we going to be able to have 90,000 people in a stadium again? You know, it's difficult. I mean, maybe in the lower leagues or something. If you go to a team like, I don't know, Fuenlabrada or something, maybe they could open early. But I think you've kind of got to do it all at once or nothing at all. So I honestly don't know. I don't know when that can happen. In terms of, will anything change? I mean, I think some format things might change. Like the Champions League that we've had over the last 2 weeks, they're trying to get it done really fast. You know, they're trying to be really quick with it. So instead of having two legs, like a partido de ida, partido de vuelta, instead of having two legs, they just have one, and it's played in a neutral place. So instead of a team, for example, we had Bayern Munich last night. Okay, Bayern Munich versus Lyon. Normally what would happen is Bayern would go to play in France at Lyon, and then Lyon would go to play at Munich, Germany, and that would be the two legs. Instead, they've just forgotten that, and they went to Lisbon in Portugal, and that's where the one game took place. And it's very popular with a lot of fans. A lot of fans want to see that because it's takes less time. Both teams attack; they have to win, so they attack. So it's more exciting, and I think a lot of people are in favor of that. And also, like, can you think of I think it would be really fun if you just had like a host country. Say it was like Portugal is the host country for the elimination rounds of the Champions League. It would be good for the Portuguese economy. It would be good for fans. Go there and, you know, in summer, have a few beers in the sunshine, travel around the country and things. You know, it could be fun. I think a lot of people are really into that idea. Now, the big question is money. Will UEFA be interested if they can't make money out of this? Maybe not. But if we still have a problem with travel next season, could maybe happen if we don't find a vaccine or anything. If we still have a problem, like restrictions on travel, that might become the new normality, and we might end up moving, you know, to one leg formats and things like that. Also, some other things like the testing, routine testing of people for things. They're allowing you more substitutes now. It's gone from 3 to 5. In the league, they gave the players little breaks to drink water because it was in summer and things. So that might change. We might stop having halves and we can have quarters like they do in American sports. I think a lot of things could change. I think things should change. That's the way everything evolves. I like changes. I like seeing new things. I mean, some changes are crazy, but I think some changes are good.
Some changes are good, and it's like with everything. I mean, this whole situation has caused a lot of stress and a lot of negative things, but also at the same time, a lot of opportunities, a lot of changes that maybe, like you're saying about this, instead of having the two legs, only having one, like they probably never would have considered ever doing that before. Yeah. And now it's on the table. And like you said, it's actually the fans like it, and it makes the game more exciting. So loads of positive things. Well, really interesting chat. Just to finish off, I like to ask each of my guests a couple of questions since we're both teachers. You are also a teacher as well, just to say that Tommy is also a fantastic English teacher as well. Well, I say as well, that sounds like I'm saying as well.
No, you are. So am I.
We're both English teachers. There you go. I'd like to ask you two questions about your best and your worst teacher. Now, of course, you don't have to tell me their names if you don't want to. We don't want to. Maybe the worst teacher, probably no one's going to want to give any names for that one. But the first question, just quickly, if you could tell us, who's the best teacher you've ever had in your life?
Best teacher I ever had was a woman called Mrs. McIntyre. And she was a Spanish teacher. And she was quite young. She was probably about 30. And she just had a lot of really modern attitudes towards teaching. She made Spanish fun for me, and she used to always go on holiday to Spain and bring me back like stuff, because it was a very small group of us at school studied Spanish. It was really, and then I did it in my last year, and there were only two of us doing it. So she used to bring me back turrón at Christmas, and she knew I was interested in football, so she used to bring me back copies of Marca magazine, Marca and all that, the newspaper, and used to just like send me resources and stuff. And she made it real for me. She made the experience of learning the language real for me. And it was like, this is a thing that people use in their lives. You know, it's a living, breathing language. And I think a lot of language teachers don't do that. They make it like a subject for you, and it just becomes a bit boring. So she was great. And she like got me interested in lots of music and stuff like that as well. Like, she taught me who Manu Chao was and things like that, and she just introduced me to a whole load of aspects of Spanish culture, Spanish history, Spanish movies. García Lorca, I didn't know who Federico García Lorca was until she told us, and she bought me books of his and things, and she gave me all this stuff for free. She never made me pay for it. Just a really nice woman, and obviously somebody that wanted you to learn. So yeah, I would say she was my best teacher.
Okay, and, she sounds great. I think everyone needs to have a Mrs. McIntyre in their life.
She was great.
On the flip side, what about the worst teacher?
Oh, hands down, without any doubt, was a guy called Mr. Fallon. Mr. Fallon, he was the worst. He was a maths teacher, a mathematics teacher at my high school, and he was really old. He was really old. He was really old to be a teacher. He was in his 70s. And he was about 2 meters tall, really big guy, and like built like a fridge, as we say. He was really, really big guy. And he had a big mustache. I could actually draw him really quickly. You know, I draw him.
Okay. I like the expression built like a fridge. We also have a ruder version of that in English, which we say, I don't know if you know, built like a shithouse. I think we say built like a shithouse. Is it shithouse? Or
like a brick shit house, I think you say.
Brick shit house. Wow, we add an extra brick as well. Okay, that's the rude version, the X-rated version.
That's Mr. Fallon there.
Okay, so
that.
Yeah, he's got the glasses, the quiff. Is it a quiff there that you've drawn
it's
at the
a
front?
Quiff, yeah. Yeah, he looked like he cut his hair by himself with a piece of broken glass, you know. So
he probably
did. Shocking haircut. But aside for that, I wouldn't have minded. I wouldn't have been a problem if he'd just been a bit kind of unique looking. But he was a terrible teacher. Yeah, I didn't really like maths very much at school. And he did nothing to make me interested. He was the opposite of Mrs. McIntyre. He didn't make it relevant to my life at all. He was just like, right, this is how you do this. Learn this. On you go. I was like, oh. He's like, well, can you explain it? Do what it says in the book. I don't understand what it says in the book. Can you help me? Oh, you know, as if I was a problem for asking questions. And it was the same for everybody. Like, and I came home every day from the class and thought, I was doing well in everything else except maths. And I was like, I used to say to mom and dad, I can't describe to you how bad this guy is. He doesn't help in that. He was just awful, just an awful, awful teacher. But the worst thing about him was he just didn't care about the student's progress. And he was from a time where probably if the student spoke without asking, you could probably hit him with a belt or something. Or
get a whack.
You get a whack
with a belt.
I think it was a ruler that they used in Spain. They used to use a ruler to hit you in the knuckles, hit you in the hand. In Scotland and England, I think it was the belt. You would have a belt. Yeah. Or the cane, and they would hit you.
My mum and dad used to tell me about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was from another time, and when I went to school, that was illegal. So I think he didn't really know what to do with the modern world.
Without the cane.
Yeah. So he was like somebody from the past coming to teach in the present. And it was obvious with his activity. Thankfully, I moved out of his class and went to another class, and I got a better maths teacher. He was called Mr. Malloy, and he actually did care, and he was good, and I did okay in the end. But I was lucky to get moved out because it was, and it wasn't just me. Everybody else in the class was like, "This guy's a disaster" and stuff. You know, he was.
So he wasn't popular. He wasn't popular. Let's put it that way.
he was popular because he was so weird. He was popular with people that didn't have him. He was like, because he was the most distinctive looking guy in the world. Like he was really big, really fat and that, and just with the mustache and everything, he was funny. But like, and he used to say funny things. Like, have you annoyed him?
So he's just a bit of a figure, like a character, you know, that people love to hate or love to make fun of.
Yeah, he used to say, we used to get these things at school if you behave badly, called punishment exercises. And it was like, you basically just had to write, like, copy loads of information about behavior and all that kind of stuff. And you used to get yellow punishment exercises and pink punishment exercises. And he used to call them punnies. Like, punishment exercises, like, punnies. And he used to be like, pink punny. And he used to say if he wasn't in the mood for any bad behavior, he used to say, I'm going to be handing out punnies like confetti. He used to just shout that at you, like, when you walked in the door. And if he started threatening the confetti threat, you knew it was going to be a good day or a bad day, depending on what you wanted. If you wanted to learn, it was going to be a bad day. But if you wanted a laugh, it was quite fun being in his class. But from a learning point of view.
He sounds like a bit of a legend, a bit of an icon, even if for a bad thing, Mr. What was his name? Mr. Fallon.
Mr. Fallon.
The legend, Mr. Fallon. Well, yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. He sounds great. To finish up, let's just make sure that everyone knows where they can find you and your podcast. So your podcast is called Speaking Football.
Yep, Speaking Football. You can find us on Twitter. That would be @speak_football_. You can also find us just on Vaughan Radio. If you just like on ebooks, you'll find us on there. We're also on Radio Marca at the weekends. So we go on Marca on Saturdays and we do a live show. If you go on our Twitter, you can see our participation in that. So we just do about 10, 15 minutes. And we speak mostly in Spanish on Marca, but we teach English phrases to the hosts. So Yeah, we do that. But you can find us on Vaughan or you can find us on Marca.
Perfect.
But yeah.
And it's on iVox, right? The if they wanted to find the podcast, it's on iVox, okay? Which is it's an app. You can download it. You can find my podcast there as well. It's IVOOX, and you can find it on there. Type in Speaking Football, and you'll find it. Well, thank you so much, Tommy. It's been a pleasure. It's been really great. I've loved that. I think my favorite was probably Built Like a Fridge.
But
I love that conversation. It's really interesting. Thank you so much for coming on.
No problem. Absolute pleasure, and good luck with everything.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Well, a fantastic discussion with Tommy. I had such a good time, and I hope you enjoyed that as well. It's fantastic listening practice to make sure that you're getting a variety of accents, especially if you're doing things like exams. It's very important that you expose yourself to that so that you're ready for anything in those dreadful exams. Well, maybe not dreadful. Maybe you like exams. I don't know. So I'm going to be leaving all the links for Tommy's stuff, his podcast, where you can find him on Twitter, in the description. So make sure you check that out. I'll also be sharing it on social media. You can find me on Instagram at @Anna_2Ns_English. Make sure that you subscribe to the podcast, Anna with Two Ns English Podcast. You can find me on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, and iVox as well. Give me a little subscribe. That's a new word. Give me a subscribe. Share it with a colleague or a friend. I would be really grateful. We can help spread the word and get more people listening. And I hope you enjoyed your introduction to season 2. I'll be back for a new episode next Wednesday. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you very, very soon. Bye-bye.